The Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Blackshaw Arts Hour. Today it's me, Ellie, and I am with...
Matt, hello.
Hooray and hello.
I thought I'd join you and not leave you to run the show on your own this time.
After last time's disaster. No, it's fine, guys. It was fine. You should listen to it. So we have got coming up a film review from Matt Boothman. We've got Stratton Alex doing some art. We've got an interview with Nicole Locke, writer of Mothman. We have got some chat about theatre. And we are going to be telling you a little bit more about our upcoming WAF show.
Yeah, lots of actual Blackshaw news this episode.
News, news, news.
Yeah, pay attention. Get your diaries out.
Open your ears. Get your pens ready. Or your mobile devices where you keep your lives now. That's me.
Tell your Google Home.
Oh, God. Yes. Don't tell the other one who will awaken if you mention her name. Good. Okay, so we're going to kick things off in the way we often do with this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Matt of the Booth, what are you reviewing for us today?
I'm going to review The Cloverfield Paradox.
I'm interested.
So this was... you know the Super Bowl, Ellie?
Oh yeah, I'm very familiar.
Yeah, we're familiar with the concept of the Super Bowl.
It's a sport.
Yes, it's a sport, but what's more important about it is that at halftime, some pop stars do some stuff.
They do a dance often.
And also on the telly when they're showing it, lots of people launch their new adverts and trailers and things.
Adverts.
And it's like the most expensive time ever that you can put on an advert.
Yes. And I also read that that Friends episode called The One After the Super Bowl confused a lot of people watching it not at live time, because normally it's about something that happens in the episode, right? The title.
Yeah.
But that time they named it because they literally aired that episode after the Super Bowl in America.
And they didn't think about the millions of times it would be repeated.
No, or the other countries it would be shown in.
So this year at the Super Bowl, while lots of other
films... Can I just say actually about Super Bowl?
Okay, yeah.
Right. Why is the Super Bowl not bowling?
I don't know.
Why is it called a Super Bowl? Is it done in a big bowl?
Maybe, yeah.
Do they win a big bowl?
Maybe. Or is it like the pools? You know, the pools isn't about pool.
No, it's not. I did think it was for a long time. I thought people were betting on the game of pool.
Yeah, or swimming.
Yes.
It's one of those misleading things.
Okay, good. And is it baseball or foot sport?
It's American foot sport.
American
foot
sport.
So you don't use your foot, usually,
No, you're allowed to use the hands.
Yes. You're encouraged to use the hands.
And no one shouts handball.
Yeah, and everybody's wearing armour.
Okay, good.
Okay, this is the Blackshaw Sports Hour.
This is why we don't have a sports segment. It would be me and Matt exchanging confused sentences.
Anyway, this year, while everybody else was debuting their trailers for their new films coming out in the spring and the summer,
yep.
J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot debuted a trailer for The Cloverfield Paradox, which then said, oh, and by the way, it's out, and you can watch it on Netflix as soon as the Super Bowl's finished.
What?
So that was a sort of stunt that they used to launch it.
That's quite interesting. I wonder what the numbers were, like whether people did literally just be like, oh, well, I'm going to watch this right now.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do anything else after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm staying up in another country real late to watch this, and I'm going to stay up even later to watch this other thing.
Yeah, all these other films they're telling me about, I have to wait a month to go and see them, whereas this one I can see it straight away.
In this newfangled era, I do not have time to wait for things. I need them immediately in front of me right now.
So anyway,
yeah.
So it's on Netflix now, you can watch it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a new one in what is becoming the Cloverfield franchise, I guess?
Because there's a lot of them and they're not all directly related.
So yeah, so there was Cloverfield, which was a found footage giant monster movie, which I think has actually stood up pretty well.
That first one, where there's like big things and they run around a lot in the city.
There is a big thing.
Oh, right.
They run around in the city and it's all on found footage.
I think that's the one I've watched.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then there's 10 Cloverfield Lane, which starred Mary Elizabeth Winstead, which we reviewed on the podcast before.
Yes, that's the one where there's maybe a big nuclear apocalypse and everyone's hiding.
Something bad might have happened outside.
But we don't know because we're in a bunker.
We don't know because we're in a bunker, and it's just a nice, tight, like, tense three-hander.
Yeah.
Which was it had been developed as a standalone project, and J.J. Abrams' production company sort of hoovered it up. and slapped the word Cloverfield in the title.
Cloverfield.
And decided it was part of the world now.
Okay, cool.
And a similar thing's happened with this one. It was being developed as an original project called The God Particle.
Yeah.
And Bad Robot hoovered this one up
Bad
as well
Robot.
And renamed it The Cloverfield Paradox.
Okay.
It's written by Oren Uziel, who wrote the screenplay for 22 Jump Street.
Oh, I liked that.
And not a lot else.
Okay.
Directed by Julius Ona, who's a Nigerian director who's directed a couple of things I'm not really aware of. Don't Look Back, The Girl Is in Trouble.
Don't know.
Which I wasn't really aware of before this. Mm-hmm. And Doug Jung, who wrote Star Trek Beyond, the
okay.
latest Star Trek movie, also has a story credit on it. So it was kind of their project, or you know, one of those. I suspect Doug Jung is a Bad Robot person.
Right.
And the others are sort of the original people who are developing it, and then it got slurped up
yeah.
By the Cloverfield franchise, which is not the way that most production companies at the moment are building their movie franchises.
No.
It's kind of the exact polar opposite to how Marvel is doing it.
Yes.
And then you've got DC movies somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Taking a bit more of a slapdash, one-by-one approach. So yeah, which means that you get these movies that are sort of vaguely thematically linked, or not exactly thematically, but that somebody has looked at them and gone, that shares some sort of atmosphere or some sort of quality with the other ones.
But yeah, they're mostly like sort of sci-fi where there's lots of unanswered questions,
yeah.
right? And so they can put it under this umbrella of, ooh, mysterious.
Yes. So in this one, this is a space one.
Oh.
So we had the giant monster one, we had the claustrophobic bunker one, and
yeah.
this is a space one.
Is it in future space or now could be now space?
It is in future space.
Okay.
So
because the other ones, what they've had in common as well is that they are, like, could happen now.
Yeah.
Right.
Indeed.
But this couldn't.
Not right now, no.
Okay.
So the world is in an energy crisis.
That's like now.
Yeah. And they're going to solve it with the Large Hadron Collider on a space station, because why not?
Okay, sure.
The Large Hadron Collider on the space station doesn't work for 18 months for some reason.
Okay.
It's sort of...
it's warming up.
Yeah, it kind of slows down the beginning of the movie, this part, and all it really is there for is to fuel this kind of vague, possible espionage, possible betrayal subplot that kind of fizzles out and gets forgotten about halfway through the film. So.
Okay, that sounds not great.
Yeah. And when they do finally get it working, it breaks reality because we shouldn't do the science.
Oh, science bad.
Yeah, you should. That's not how you fix your problems.
No, God didn't want us to do science.
And from there, it's kind of your basic haunted house in space movie, a bit like
your basic haunted house in space,
which sounds like there is a tradition of these movies, like Alien.
Is
Alien is haunted house in space.
Okay, yeah.
Things like Solaris is kind of haunted house in space.
Yeah.
Things like that, or the not alien one from last year with Ryan Reynolds, Life, that was sort of monster of a haunted house in space. Yeah, it's full of good people.
Uh-huh.
Stars Gugu Mbatha-Raw,
uh-huh.
Who seems to be doing a bit more science fiction stuff at the moment. She was in a very the best episode of Black Mirror that there's been.
Still need to catch up.
Yeah, not the current series, the series before, which is an episode called San Junipero,
right.
which has the distinction of being the only ever Black Mirror episode with a happy ending.
Ooh, okay. Maybe I'll start with that one, because yeah. with Black Mirror, I feel like I need to kind of work myself up to being in a resilient state of mind.
Yeah. So she's the lead, although it's definitely an ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
David Oyelowo, launching from Spooks, also played Martin Luther King in Selma, which we've talked about on the show
yeah.
before. Zhang Ziyi from Crouching Tiger. Daniel Brühl, who I liked a lot in Captain America Civil War. And Elizabeth Debicki is in it as well. And so good cast, like really...
Very strong.
Yeah.
And like a lot of people who are like craft.
Yeah.
Like they're actors.
Yeah, lots of quite sort of different kind of strengths and skills and things in there in terms of acting talent. But then what they're sort of chucked into is... ends up being this kind of grab bag of some sci-fi stuff and some horror stuff, and it doesn't necessarily all hang together as anything.
Right.
So you've got, basically people have gone, let's do a space thing that's a bit creepy and horror-y and tense. What can we put in it? And they've thrown ideas at it, and they've just kind of kept everything in,
mm-hmm.
is how it kind of feels. So you get some stuff, you get some transporter accident, like The Fly type horror stuff.
Yeah.
Some other general kind of body horror things. You get the horror stuff you get in space movies, which is all about the emptiness of space and the hostility of space and
yeah.
how we're not meant to be there. You've got the, like, trapped in a claustrophobic environment you can't escape with somebody who wants to kill you sort of horror.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of general weird bizarro stuff with... Chris O'Dowd's in it as well.
Ooh.
I remember now, because some of the bizarro stuff happens to him.
Yeah.
With, like, getting sucked into walls
oh.
and stuff. And none of it is real... It's never... It's all just hand-waved away with... the collider threw us into an alternate reality, and this alternate reality doesn't like us very much. So
okay.
all this very inconsistent, different stuff is
yeah.
happening.
So is it like they kind of made a bullet point list of, wouldn't it be cool if
yes,
these things
much.
Happened in this film?
Very much that.
And then didn't kind of make the connections maybe.
Yeah, they did their bullet point list of, wouldn't it be cool if all these things? And then went, okay, but what would make every single one of these things happen? What could they all be? What could be the cause of all these disparate things?
Generic
like,
other dimension.
We're in the wrong dimension, maybe. So it eventually does remember to sort of give the main character, Hamilton, Gugin Bathoror's character, a kind of moral dilemma to work with. And she does end up going on something not too dissimilar to the character arc that Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character goes on in 10 Cloverfield Lane,
mm-hmm.
where... she goes from sort of being pulled along by events to taking control of them, which is yeah fine. That's a perfectly good main character arc for a film. It starts giving her some dilemmas about there's people that she lost in her home reality, and maybe they're still around in this reality. And does she want to save everybody on the station and get them back to where they should be, or does she want to stay in this reality with the where the people that she cares about are still alive back
okay.
on Earth? Although that still means she has to then like get out of space and back to Earth
yeah.
still. But it all comes a little bit late, that stuff,
right?
To really land. So it's, yeah. And there's a B plot going on with her partner back on Earth Prime, or whatever you want to call it, finding a lost child, and there's some sort of unspecified stuff, bad stuff going on in the wake of the space station disappearing.
Okay.
And I got... the child was a total red herring, and I don't know whether this was just me getting confused, but I was drawing parallels between the child and a mysterious character who shows up in the other reality. And I was like, oh, I get it. They're the same person. And they weren't.
Right.
So that might just be me reaching for more meaning than the yeah. movie was trying to give me. I don't know what that plot was trying to achieve. And like, it builds up to an actually quite good ending twist.
Right.
But the ending twist would have worked just as well, or maybe even better, if we hadn't had the scenes
subplot.
Back on Earth first,
right.
and if it had been like, you don't know if the universe they came from is just gone.
Yeah.
Maybe they destroyed it on their way out.
Right.
So lots of ideas thrown at it.
Mm.
Although they're all kind of ideas in the shape of images rather than, like, maybe ideas is too grand a term for what was thrown into this. It's more... scenes or
yeah like snapshots
yeah.
rather than narrative
yeah I want to get this shot of a disembodied arm crawling along the floor in the spaceship
yeah
and
we'll explain it later
yeah how do we get to that without the idea that would actually go behind it. It's got more of an explicit tie to the original Cloverfield than 10
mm-hmm.
Cloverfield Lane does. So it does feel like potentially they're trying a bit harder to actually make a universe out of this,
right.
rather than it being what from Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane, it seemed like what they were building was a sort of anthology of films with similar tone.
Yeah.
Whereas it now seems like they are actually trying to build a connected universe right. of interconnected stories that all tie into each other in some way, which, as I say, it's an interesting way of trying to do that by just getting people's scripts that are stuck in development hell and making them and putting Cloverfield in the title.
Yeah.
And, like, adding an image near the end that ties it in.
I feel like they need some narrative support.
A little bit. It could have done with some tightening up. Maybe take out some of the images and dial up some of the ideas.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the stunt worked.
Right.
I found out about it because people were like, hey, they did this mic drop at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And Netflix actually promoted it, which they actually don't do with a huge amount of their original releases.
No, it just appears.
Yeah. And I watched it. So
something's working. So
the marketing is working.
The marketing's totally
even
working.
If the product is not quite so.
So there you go,
quality.
Guys. If you've got a film you're not sure about, just put it on after the Super Bowl. No probs.
Yeah. Release it straight after the Super Bowl, straight into people's homes and phones.
Yeah, we are truly living in the future.
Yeah.
Okay, right, so a bit of a shaky one.
Yeah.
Not totally convinced that I'll bother watching it.
Yeah, probably worth flicking on if you're, like, with friends and...
So it's more of a background.
You want something to sort of maybe poke fun at a little bit.
Okay.
One of those, like...
We're not talking Sharknado levels of
not
poking fun.
Nowhere near Sharknado levels. No, it's not trying to laugh at itself.
Okay.
Anything that's wrong with it is, unfortunately, not its own...
It
choice.
Does sound a bit like I could start watching it halfway through when the Hadron Collider started working and I would get...
Potentially.
Just as much
I've
out of it.
I've probably over-egged how long it takes. Like, in story time...
Okay.
There is an 18-month gap.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean
that it
takes up loads of
the film. But it's not actually
half
of the film.
It's just it... You get a few... You get further into the film and you go, wait, so what was the point... In story terms, of them saying it took them 18 months to get it.
Yeah, can't we just start?
Yeah,
right. It starts.
The story would be the same if it worked first time.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Maybe it was nature telling you that it shouldn't work. They were like 18 months of nature screaming at you. This is not supposed to happen. It's bad. Maybe that's it.
Maybe.
Oh, just maybe they made some poor choices.
Yep. There's some good stuff coming up though.
Oh yes, what are you looking forward to seeing and possibly reviewing?
So I'm very much looking forward to Black Panther, which is out in a week or so. The Shape of Water is finally coming to our UK shores.
I know, why is it's quite unusual nowadays to have such a big gap between US release and UK release.
Often if there's a gap, we're the ones that get it first at the moment. But it seems to be a lot of the Oscar films, because Lady Bird is the other one that I'm looking forward to, and that's
been
out
for ages.
For a while. Yep.
How bizarre.
And with so many good things coming out in February, I'm really hoping that I can just avoid seeing the new 50 Shades this time.
Yeah.
I thought I might see Black Panther instead, you know?
But we need to complete the trilogy now.
Nothing if not completest.
How about we sponsor you to go and see it?
Well, how about some of you come with me this time?
Oh, I'm so not willing to watch it. Like, I think I could maybe handle it alone, but I can't watch it with another person that I know.
What if we go to one of those screens that let you drink?
Maybe. Or just like a screen where we know it's going to be really empty and we can sit at opposite ends of the screen. So I don't have to like be embarrassed with you in close proximity to me. Okay, well, we'll decide about that later. But Black Panther, I'm really looking forward to that. And Shape of Water does look excellent. They're both out this week when we're broadcasting the show. And I think there's more stuff coming quite soon. I felt like the last few weeks have been a bit slow.
Yeah,
because there's not been anything I fancy seeing, even though I have my yearly paid, doesn't cost me per film.
Yeah,
thing.
I vaguely had my eye on Early Man and Downsizing.
Okay, yeah.
But it sort of, it speaks to how lukewarm I was on them, that when I saw Cloverfield Paradox was on Netflix, I was like, that means I don't have to go out.
Fair. I saw Early Man.
Yeah.
Disappointing.
Oh no.
On the levels
but
of Nick Park movies. I know.
High bar, I suppose.
Very high bar. Yeah. If it hadn't have been an Aardman production, I maybe would have enjoyed it more actually, because I wouldn't be able to compare it to their previous work. But it just felt a bit flat.
Oh.
I wasn't super into any of the characters, and I think I only laughed out loud once.
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Just it's a real shame.
Rewatch The Pirates and Eventual Scientists.
Yeah. I would say performances by Rob Brydon was a real highlight. He does a lot of the voices, a lot of impressions, and there's a sort of carrier pigeon that does, it performs the message in the voice of the person who sent it. So he did a lot of those, and they were very, very good.
I like that idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea. But there just weren't as many sort of touches that they have been able to do in the past. So, you know, it was fine, but it wasn't great.
I was about to say they can't all be winners, but I guess when your films take so much care and so much time to produce...
They're hoping they're winners.
You get like maybe a second of footage in a day if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Which actually sort of leads us into what we're going to talk about next.
So, bearing in mind how long it should take to produce something quality in stop motion, we actually challenged Strat and Alex to do some art in that precise vein. So let's hear how they react to the news.
Strat and Alex do art.
Oh yeah.
Yes, art. Oh.
Oh, I mean, it looks lovely, mate.
So we've got a very exciting joint task for the two of you for today's Strat and Alex do art.
Yeah.
Phew, we don't have to exercise judgment.
No, we don't. We can turn off our decision-making brains for now.
Just appreciate the art.
Don't jump the gun.
hey, I think we've done pretty well up until this point. You've already always been impressed by at least one of the offerings given.
And the last time we did a joint one, we did what?
Yes, the storybook you did with Jessica Pride.
Jessica Pride.
Excellent. So this time we are asking you to create a stop-motion film.
Yes.
So Jessica Pride
goes to
wherever we can make.
Yeah. You have an hour to do the task.
Right.
And you're going to go up to Alex's flat in order to carry out the task, partly because he has a collection of objects that may be useful for
this.
I was going to say objet d'art, but they're not really objet d'art.
Toys.
They're toys.
Collectibles, they're collectibles.
We'll leave it at that. I think that's fair enough.
It's not an action figure, it's a figurine.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you're a grown-up, you're allowed to add the E.
I don't think I've got any action figurines.
Ah.
I don't think so. I mean, I've got toys, yeah, definitely. That's sure. The thing. Yeah.
Lots of Lego.
We'll see what happens. And you're going to use the movie studio in your pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be... done on an iPhone. We've found a free app that will allow us to make this.
We should probably say what the app is.
It is. Wait for it.
I'm waiting.
Continue
I'm so
tempted.
Just fill until he finds the
stop
app.
Stop Motion Studio Free Pro.
It's called Stop Motion Studio.
What?
Stop Motion Studio.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
So thanks, Stop Motion Studio, for your free app. I assume there are in-app purchases.
Yeah, if you want all the stuff it does.
But you are staying simple.
We are.
Good.
We're good like that.
And those are pretty much only the only restrictions we're putting on this one.
Yeah, we're not giving you a theme because we don't want to limit you in terms of kind of the items, I guess, that you might have at your disposal. I think you'll have a limited enough brief by the location and the materials that you have to hand. So it's just a limit of time. And in terms of the length of time of the piece you produce, that really just depends on how much you can manage to do in an hour. So we'll be excited to see what it is that you show us. And of course, this is a visual medium, so we will be making it available on all of our social media channels for the listeners to take a look at as well. But Matt and I will do our best to describe what we're seeing. For anyone who doesn't know, stop motion is an animation technique that physically manipulates an object so that it appears to move on its own. The object is moved in small increments between individually photographed frames, creating the illusion of movement when the series of frames is played as a fast sequence. So there you go. So you might want to use something like dolls with movable joints or clay figures.
Clay figures, yeah.
Got plenty of those.
Loads of them lying around.
Have we still got the clay from sculpture? Back in the day?
Yeah, but it also says, and this is of course the trusted source of Wikipedia, not all stop motion requires figures or models. Many stop motion films can include using humans, household appliances, and other things for comic effect. So, you know, you've got humans and
other things
and household appliances at your disposal.
Yeah,
yeah.
Such possibilities.
Endless.
Such.
Wow.
Okay, good. Well, you sound ready to go.
Oh, yes.
So your hour begins now.
The Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Ooh, that's a tasty treat.
Well, there we go. We'll have to come back to them later in the show and see how they get on with limited technology and preparation and resources.
So I'm expecting if they go up to Aardman standard, we might get maybe a tenth of a second's worth of animation.
Yeah, I mean, we have got very open guidelines with this task, so they're not actually going to be making clay models. they will be using... Well, I mean, they can use whatever they like.
Inanimate objects,
people, whatever. But, yeah, I'm not... I don't think I'm going to compare it to Aardman. I feel like that would be really unreasonable. right, well, the next thing we're going to be doing is having a little chat with the wonderful Nicole Locke. Now, Nicole is the writer of... last year's, so 2017's, Blackshaw Showcase Award. So she won the exciting prize of working with us to develop her piece into a full-length production, and it is being staged on the 8th of March as an industry showcase at the Old Red Lion Theatre.
So not necessarily open to the public, sort of by invitation only, it's a special thing.
Yeah, it is very special.
Yeah. But historically, Blackshaw Showcase stuff has gone on to be produced... on proper runs for proper people to see.
That's right. So it's a very exciting project, and there is a chance with this one that we might have some tickets up for sale. We are TBC on that.
Okay.
But this will be, if that happens, this will be the first time ever that that's happened.
What's the listening equivalent of watch this space? Keep an ear on us.
Yes, keep your ears open.
And also keep an eye on all of our Twitters and things.
Yes, keep your lobes flapping and your social medias updated, refreshed. Okay, good. Well, now you will feel sick. We will dial in the lovely Nicole. Welcome, Nicole, to the Blackshaw Arts Hour. It's lovely to be chatting with you.
Lovely to chat with you too. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. So we're just going to ask you a few things about Mothman. We're very excited. And it's quite an intriguing story. It is literally about a man who's trying to turn himself into a moth. Not as some people might think, a sort of Batman situation where he's super rich and has lots of gadgets, nor indeed a Spider-Man situation where he's been bitten by a spider and has basically turned into one already. So just to give everyone a good standard of expectation there. What inspired you to write the story?
Well, it's a bit random, but I was reading an article initially about a man in Germany who was wandering around Berlin wearing a suit made out of light bulbs, and he was turning them on and off for things that he liked, and I just found it funny when he said that apparently women don't respond well when you turn on your lights for them, and so that got me to think about moths, as you do.
sure.
The larger story of Mothman and the relationship between two brothers, I think it's more because I was, having grown up with two older brothers, I'd been fascinated by that sort of dynamic. And then as I was redrafting the play with yourselves, Blackshaw, I realised it was more suited a relationship between a brother and sister. So yeah, I was kind of intrigued to work on that dynamic and explore that some more.
Yeah, that's something that we've certainly been really interested in working with you on the script, is that it initially was, when we did it at the shortlist event, it was sent in as a script between two brothers. And we've kind of, I quite early on after it was awarded thought, oh, it'd be interesting if there was a more like a mixed gender dynamic in there. And you were willing to play around with that. So then when we had the workshops a couple of weeks ago, we had some female actors come along as well and had a play around. And was it helpful seeing it on its feet in terms of female performers?
Yeah, definitely. It was really interesting to see the different interpretations they took, how the meanings in the writing changed relating to the different gender. And it was, particularly interesting for me as watching women read it. It sort of hit something in me going, okay, this feels more like me and my brothers rather than my brothers together, and so it sort of made everything click a bit more.
Okay, that's interesting, and kind of, I guess, goes back to the whole write what you know thing. You end up sort of subconsciously writing from your own point of view.
Yeah, I mean, the whole story has nothing to do with me and my brothers, but...
I'm glad you've highlighted that. it's not autobiographical. Okay, noted. And one thing I'm always intrigued by, as I'm not a writer myself, is how do you get yourself to actually sit down and write? How do you get the discipline to do that? Do you have some kind of routine?
Definitely. I think it is really hard, and I know it's a lot of writers struggle with it. I think it is important to get yourself writing every day. I'm terrible at it, but I do try to most days and sit either early in the morning before work or when I get back and at least do an hour or so. I think bribery helps. bribe myself with treats or such things, going, if you finish this page, you can go have that chocolate bar. But I think as long as you're writing about something that you're truly interested in, that does make a really big difference. And you need to have that real dedication and urge to do it to spur you on, even on days when you're feeling really lazy or just tired. You need that to keep you going.
And how has it been working with Blackshaw, kind of with your own self-discipline in writing and the demands of working with a production company?
I found it really helpful. It's been really good. I work well with deadlines and talking with people, because it does give you that extra thing to work towards rather than when you're just writing for yourself. And having Vicky, the producer of the piece, wanting to look at drafts and having that feedback as well, it's really exciting, and it's really good to be able to show your work to other people and have them feedback. And that does help when you then go on to redraft, having that enthusiasm and input there.
Great.
When you get feedback from a third party, or you know, an external person on your own work, how do you judge what feedback to take on board and what you should kind of say, no, you're wrong, this is my vision?
I think that's a difficult one. I think sometimes it's just blatantly obvious if it's a terrible thing that they've come up with. Yeah, it's really difficult because you want to be sure of your piece, but then everyone has different opinions, and they might have spotted something that you'd never thought of before. I think as long as you're certain on your main story, like the core of it, then you should be fine, and you can pick up and take what you feel is necessary. But yeah, it's really difficult to judge, especially from people you respect and you always have good opinions, what to take and not. But I think you need to play around with it when you're writing. You can always go back if it doesn't work out. It's not a route of no return. So yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? And I think something we've certainly tried to do from our side is make suggestions. And then it's really great working with writers like yourself who are like, yeah, I'll give it a go. And then sometimes, you know, they'll send you another draft and you'll be like, oh, actually, that suggestion does not work. Or they'll suddenly be like, oh, actually, that made this scene, like, I read it totally differently this time round, and it's really helped. So it's yeah, that kind of willingness to go for trial and error, I think, which is really important when you're in the development stages. There's just going to, I know that we're going to be approaching that tricky time where it's like, okay, we have to now say that's it. No more playing with it before the performance. And that's approaching quite rapidly, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. important. I know it's often the writer that easy to think of our writing as our sort of babies as such, but you can't be too precious over it and too defensive. I think that's really important when you're writing. You need to be open to feedback and willing to work with it. You can't have that sort of closed off mindset. I think it's really important to accept other people's views.
It does make me wonder what it's like writing novels, because it's not the same as it is, obviously, when we're doing playwriting with people, there's that opportunity to have actors come in and do a workshop, and people's point of view is a natural thing that you discuss with, you know, the potential director and producer and so on. But for novel writing, it's kind of just you and your editor, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why part of the reason I steered away from novel writing in the past. I do like that sort of collaborative nature, and I mean, you're always the writer, but having the views and input from other people, I think it's a really beneficial thing, and really exciting at times.
And is there something in particular that you're most looking forward to about seeing the play on its feet?
So much. I'm really looking forward to seeing Liam, the director's interpretation of it. I think that's going to be really interesting, because you always have an image of your work in your head. And so to see how someone else has seen it and what they want to draw from it, that's always really interesting. And people's response always, it will be really interesting to see that. And you know, it's really always really exciting to see something that you've built up in your head and just created on your own in your room or cafe or at work actually come to life. And that's, yeah, there's so much I'm looking forward to.
I imagine it must be very, like, that idea of there being a world you've created in just in your brain suddenly being available for everyone else to see. It's like them being able to look into your brain a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. That's the daunting side. They'll probably all go away thinking I'm a mad woman. But...
it's okay. Yeah. We're pitching it as surreal comedy. It's fine.
Do you have any? Did you have to do any Google searches in research for this play that you're worried about people seeing in your search history?
Oh my goodness! So many random searches for moth facts. Like really strange things, such as, I don't know, moth intercourse and mating habits and that sort of thing. Yeah.
So people are going to think that you're some kind of moth sex fiend.
Exactly. If there is some sort of government scheme looking over, that will be seriously judging my search history.
Oh God, that's brilliant. Well, we announced the dates and so on already, but now, as of this week, we're able to announce the cast for Mothman. We're having the wonderful Megan Pemberton and Eddie Usher play brother and sister. So how I know that you saw them at the workshop the other week, Nicole. So are you feeling excited now that there's real life people?
Yeah, definitely. The workshop was so great, and all the actors that came along were brilliant, to be honest. But definitely, when seeing May and Eddie together, that was, really clicked there. And so that was really exciting to see them. Even with the few short scenes we were looking at, their chemistry, yeah, it really did bring it to life and was good.
Excellent. Well, Matt, unless you've got anything further? No, you have sated our questions and curiosities, and we're very excited to see the show soon. And good luck with the final touches on the script.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, Nicole.
Bye.
Oh, lovely Nicole.
I'm looking forward to the show now.
Yeah.
Not like I wasn't before.
No, but you're extra looking forward to it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I've got more context.
Good. Good, 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 good. It's always exciting to see the showcase come around again.
Yeah.
And in case anyone's wondering, the Showcase Award will be running again, but we are adjusting the timeline to allow for more of a chance for us to involve designers and directors from emerging levels. Ooh. Of the industry. So we're more working around things like study timelines. Mm-hmm. For people. So at the moment, our timeline's not very friendly for people who are in their final year at university. Uh-huh. For example. So we're going to be doing a little bit of a reshuffle of that. And as always, keep your eyes pinned and your social media feeds updated for announcements. So I was going to have a little chatteroo about some theatre outings that I have partaken recently. Yeah. The first one was The Ferryman.
Yeah, I was on this one as well.
Yes. Honk. That's the theatre train. How was your feeling about The Ferryman by Jez Butterworth?
I loved it. I am a big Jez Butterworth stan. I've enjoyed his work since I studied Mojo in school. You know, I discovered him early.
So committed.
Yeah. So Jerusalem was his big breakout hit. Just basically anything he does is always worth the ticket price and more.
Fanboy.
And we were talking in the two intervals and afterwards about how it's a much more ambitious play than he's ever really done before, in terms of there's a lot of things that they tell you are rules of thumb in theatre and in playwriting.
Don't do these things.
Yeah, don't do these things. And he breaks all of them. Like, the audience can only hold maybe 8 characters in their head. No, how about let's have about 20?
Yeah.
Never work with animals or children. Let's have live animals and small children acting on the stage. All sorts.
I love the idea that you've actually said that the animals are acting. Like, they're trained, yeah, like, to in acting, and they've really rehearsed the role.
Hey, I believed in them.
I believed that they were animals. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very Irish.
Oh my goodness, so Irish.
It's about a big Irish family, and one of them has some stuff, or a couple of them have some stuff in their past that threatens to come and disrupt things, and disrupt the upcoming harvest festival.
Yeah.
And that's all you can really say in terms of a synopsis.
Yes.
But it's just like, it is joyous and touching and... Yeah. Tense and scary, all of those
funny
things, funny, yeah, all of these things at once.
Yeah, it's very human.
Very.
And I wasn't worried because it's Jez Butterworth, but I think had it not been a Jez Butterworth, or I hadn't known it was Jez Butterworth, I would have been a bit concerned that it was going to be a bit politically.
Uh-huh.
But it was not politically, even though it was politically.
Yeah.
So politics come into it, but it's personal politics. It's not...
Well, it's
like,
about somebody who's trying to leave politics behind,
yes,
and just live a family life.
Yes.
But of course, politics infects everything. And
yeah.
You like deciding that you're not going to take part in it is a political stance in itself,
yeah,
and it's going to come and bite you at some point.
Yeah. Well put. No, I think I would just recommend it wholeheartedly.
Yep. It's on till May.
It is. So it is running at the Gielgud Theatre up until the 19th of May. And there are tickets of all sorts of echelons of prices. We got nice cheap ones, and we're up in the gods, but we still had a great view and really enjoyed it.
Yep. Yeah, no, there wasn't a bad view.
No, so I think it's definitely something that I would recommend to everybody.
Absolutely.
And there's baby rabbits.
Yeah.
Spoiler. The other show that I have been to see was, in fact, only last night I went to see it, The Birthday Party, by Harold Pinter at the Harold Pinter Theatre.
This is the anniversary revival.
25th anniversary.
Yeah, of The Birthday Party.
Yeah, and it is absolutely star-studded, which is not my reason for seeing it, and often I'm averse to seeing theatre that is star-studded, but I was intrigued. It's Stephen Mangan, Zoe Wanamaker...
Toby Jones,
and other famos whose names escape me at the moment.
Do you feel like it maybe counterbalances that? Because I think possibly it being Pinter might be off-putting in some cases. I'm definitely a little bit off-put.
I was surprised
Pinter.
That you didn't want to go. Pinter is not always an easy watch.
No.
It is often confusing and bizarro. And at points upsetting, I would say. This ticked all of those boxes. it sort of starts off making you think it's a nice kitchen sink drama. And it's not. It's not. So you get this lovely opening, not a spoiler at all, opening where it's a husband and wife and she's made him his breakfast. And
not
there's...
a spoiler for a 25-year-old play.
Yes. And there's lots of just nice gentle chat about cornflakes and tea. And then loads of really weird stuff happens. it starts getting really weird about 2/3 of the way through.
Is this another epic two-interval jobby?
It's not epic.
Okay.
Luckily, it runs at 2 hours and 10, including interval, It's one interval, two halves, three acts. Act one, interval, acts two and three. Act one's relatively normal, two and three are batshit. It was really enjoyable. I would say it's probably not one to just like take your mum to unless she's a theatre aficionado. Because I think to your regular Joe it's hard to enjoy because there's nothing to get. So the feedback from One Amongst Us, which I concur with, was I just don't get it. And the problem is with Pinter, there's nothing to get. There's no point, there's no full explanation. And Richard Stratton, who was with us and is obviously very into his theatre and is a writer, laughed uproariously at the idea that there would be answers and something to get.
Some sort of resolution.
Yeah.
Or tying together of threads.
Yeah, there's none of that. There's none of that. I mean, a character appears to die and then is fine. So...
stuff happens and then it's the end.
Yeah, stuff happens and then stuff unhappens. And then more stuff happens. And then you think it's the end, but it's not the end. And then 20 minutes more happens and then it ends. But it's not ended.
I don't know. So I know a couple of Pinter plays. This isn't one of them.
Okay.
Is it a stupid question to ask? Whose birthday is it?
Not a stupid question to ask, although the answer is actually nobody's.
I thought that might be the case.
But there is a birthday party. And there's some conversations that go, it's your birthday, it's not my birthday. Yep.
That's about what I expected.
Any other questions?
No. I think we've got the flavour of it.
Yeah. I mean, the performances are absolutely outstanding. Really, really, really fantastic. Zoe Wanamaker gives a very understated and brilliant portrayal of a sort of slightly mad old lady. And it's really nice to see her in a role where she's kind of a bit more vulnerable. She's often in roles where she's kind of very strong, very hard-headed, in control. And this was not that at all.
Like interpreted or like noticeably directed, or have they just sort of let the text do its thing and let the cast do its thing?
Well, as is the case with Pinter, it really is kind of down to you to interpret the text, because if you just read a Pinter play, it makes even less sense than performing it, if that's possible, because there's so much that relies on pause and as in pauses, not like bear pause, and also intonation and your choice of delivery. I noticed particularly with Stephen Mangan's character, he's playing someone he played this person as basically mad, like, but he doesn't think he's mad. And he delivers everything like really strong, super strong. And like, this makes total sense. I'm aggressively making sense. But as an audience member, you're like, well, he sounds like he's making sense, but I don't think he's making sense. So I think they'd had a lot of fun workshopping it. It hasn't been manipulated in terms of like a crazy design or like a mixed up chronology.
They haven't decided it's set in an abattoir this time.
No, nothing like that. But I have a feeling, even if they wanted to do that, I think that Pinter's rights guidelines are so tight that actually you cannot deviate.
He's one of them. I think you can't.
Yeah, I think maybe not as bad as Beckett, but I think there are restrictions on what you can do.
Fair enough.
It also makes slightly more sense than Beckett. Yeah. Just to put that out there.
On the spectrum of things.
It's not a woman buried in a pile of sand going through a handbag a la Beckett. but it's up there. So yeah, I would, if you're curious, I recommend going to see it. And if you're big into your theatre, it's a classic, so go and see it. Again, all sorts of ticket prices and seating available. We were in the gods and had a great view.
I don't have the listing in front of me, but I'm getting a psychic message that maybe it's on at the Harold Pinter Theatre.
That's weird that, yeah, it is at the Harold Pinter Theatre. And it's running until the 14th of April. So there's still plenty of time to go and see it. Enjoy. So from the surreal to the sublime, we are now going to dive back into Stratton Alex doing some art. It might just be the surreal to the surreal. Let's see how they got on with their stop motion challenge.
Stratton Alex do art.
Welcome back, Alex and Strat. Have you created a masterpiece?
We've created something.
What he said.
It's a thing.
It is.
And how did you find the process?
really good fun.
That's a good laugh, yes.
Yeah, really good fun.
We dragooned in Alex's housemate, Glenn, as well.
Shout out to Glenn.
Shout out to Glenn.
Thank you, Glenn.
Yeah, so we had a helper.
Good.
Yeah.
We did a little bit of research while you were doing that into stop motion, like looking at some of the big British stop motion houses, like Aardman, and the famous Wallace and Gromit movies.
Yeah.
Did you know that on a lot of those movies, it took a full day of shooting to get a second of footage?
I can believe it.
What?
I mean, they should have just had someone standing behind the camera saying, move, 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 which is what I've been doing for the past hour.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Just get, move, 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 slower, move.
Faster.
Yeah, they could do about 30 frames in a day and film is 24th frames per second.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's insane.
And yours is 40 seconds long. So yeah. And you only took an hour. So you
Aardman, watch out.
Yeah. Kick him into a cocked hat.
Exactly.
Good. Well, I hope that your brevity is not a reflection of its quality.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yes. Right. Well, without further ado, Matt and I will watch it and you'll be able to hear our reaction, I guess.
Right. Where can you both see it?
We can both see it if you face
it. I recommend that you look up Blackshore Update on Twitter or Blackshore on Facebook and watch along.
Yes.
Definitely do that.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
Here we go.
Well, that was
a horror classic in the making.
That was quite terrifying. So I would describe that as a sleeping man being attacked and eaten by a coat.
Yes, that's pretty much exactly what happened.
That was lurking in his wardrobe.
Yes, and only at points was clearly being conducted by another man.
Yeah, we couldn't really make it so we could go back and get rid of the shots where you could see a bit of Glenn's head.
Yeah, I mean 100% of Glenn's head.
Yeah.
Good. It was very good though, I thought.
I thought so too. Yeah.
I really enjoyed the soundtrack.
Yeah, we discovered that you could do that like at the very end, and you're like, "Do you want to do something?" I was like, "Yeah, why?" Well, yeah.
Dub over with worried noises.
Yeah. Concerned noise.
That's great because it means it will be applicable to people of all languages.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like a silent film.
Yes.
Sort of accidentally done silent movie making as well as stop motion.
Ooh, but that's a good idea though. Yeah. Future idea.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Not at all expensive.
Nice use of sort of mixed filmmaking techniques in that you had a person and then using the strength of stop motion, which is like making objects move.
Yeah.
Without needing an expensive visual effects budget.
Yes.
Yes. That the puppetry was excellent.
Yeah. I mean, Glenn is just.
Isn't he currently actually in real life working on?
He's a production coordinator, so he doesn't actually do anything with...
But it is a puppet.
It is, actually. Yeah, a puppet-based production. I don't know if I can say what it is. I'm going to keep quiet on that front.
It's puppet-based, and he's obviously somehow managed to...
Encapsulate that.
Yeah, he's a bit of that.
He's absorbing some skills. It's by osmosis. Well, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Me too.
Very glad that it's not competing against anything because I don't know how you could top that, really.
Well, maybe one day in the future we will, now that you guys have cut your teeth the stop motion world, we'll make you do one each.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think this could be definitely a future competition.
No.
It's tricky.
It is.
Who's going to get Glenn?
I don't know. He lives with me. He's mine. Get your own Glenn.
So obviously Alex appeared in the film. So does that mean that Strat, you did all of the behind the camera operation.
I did, yes. And so a lot of the placing of everybody. And
if it becomes a competition, you're very much at an advantage of having used it all before.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we'll allow some practice for practice. Alex before we do that.
I was mostly just pressing the take a picture button while yelling move a little bit. So
did
you, I can't say I was an expert.
Did you steady the device at all?
No, or were
you
just holding it. But it's got a cool, the app that we used has got like a thing where it shows you a kind of like semi-transparent overlay of your last photo. So you could kind of line it up and take the shot and then make
sure.
Really
good.
Yeah. I think it's called Onion Skin, I think, in the biz.
In the biz.
In the biz.
An onion skin.
I think that's what it's called, yeah.
Also, thanks for using the word biz. Flashback to 1998. Keeping things current. Great. Well, I thought that was very enjoyable. We will obviously be putting that up on all of our social medias, so tune in there to see it with your own eyes. Thanks, chaps.
No worries.
You're welcome.
Go on. Treat yourself to something.
Subscribe to the Blackshaw Arts Hour on your generic podcast resource.
You deserve it.
So if you want to see the results of that, you can indeed see them on all of our onlines.
And I would recommend that because I don't think... I don't think the audio medium necessarily does it justice.
Funny that, because stop motion, kind of visual. Look out in particular for some accidental hand cameos from Alex's flatmate, Glenn. Thanks, Glenn.
Oh, does that mean we have to pay him residuals now?
Yeah, all of the money we're making from this, we'll give him a percentage. What's zero divided by...
I don't know. I think probably trying to divide zero by anything, you'll cause the Cloverfield paradox and your arm will come off.
Oh, nightmare. I need that for later. Okay. So, well, we've got more art already in the bank coming up for the next episode. But we are always open to suggestions. So if you like a type of art, you know a type of art, you do a type of art, you are a type of art, let us know your type of art. You can contact us in all of the many ways that will be revealed in a jingle very shortly. We're going to just wrap up the show with a little plug and some more information about our WAF offering this year. What's WAF, Matt?
Let me see if I've got this right, because I always forget. Is it the Wandsworth Arts Fringe?
Yes, it is. The question mark in your voice is optional. WAF? We are taking part in the Wandsworth Arts Fringe, and we are extremely excited and grateful to have received some funding this year. So we are able to go ahead with all the bells and whistles and other sound effect creating paraphernalia that Andy Crane needs.
It's a lovely vote of confidence.
It is a very nice vote of confidence, and it really takes the pressure off and allows us to produce something of high quality without... breaking ourselves.
And it gives you a better radio experience, because if not, we would be begging you to donate to our Kickstarter right now.
Oh man, Kickstarter. Happy 2012, everyone. Yeah.
Sorry, is it all Patreon now?
I don't know, man. Anyway, moral of the story is Frankie Fightwell. Okay, so The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell, which is a fantastic radio play comedy written by Chris Buxey, is going to be performed on the 11th and the 12th of May at the Putney Arts Theatre at 7:30 p.m. on both days. It is the opportunity to sit in the audience for a live recording of a radio play. So not only do you get all the benefits of seeing a play performed right in front of your very eyes, but you get to watch the sound effects being created live too.
Yeah. Mm. If anybody saw Miss McSkimming Mystery, which was the previous time that Blackshaw did something like this.
Yeah. Previous and only time.
Yeah. It'll be a similar experience, though, with a different story, with a different tone.
Yes, exactly. And a different cast.
Of course.
So we're very pleased to be able to announce we have made our cast up of the following people. We've built them out of John Raymond, who will be playing the writer in the story, Stuart. And the idea is that he's writing The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell and struggling. And he's helped by his imaginary friend, if you like to say it that way, Frankie Fightwell, who we'll be playing by the wonderful Abigail Morgan. And she is also doubling up as the character of Stuart, the writer's daughter. Doubling on radio. Oh. How's it gonna work? It's okay. It's totally gonna work.
If only Stuart had an editor or producer like Nicole has.
I know, right? He does, though, have an agent.
Ah.
Mm. So his agent, Dominic, is being played by the wonderful Tom Slatter, and he is doubling as the villain of the book Stuart's writing, who's called Victor.
This doesn't sound confusing.
It's not confusing. It's all fine. Five characters, three actors, one excellent radio play. Next time, we should have some interviews with the cast of Mothman and the director, Liam, to come all at you. So you've got that to look forward to, as well as, of course, Matt's review and some more art things. And, gosh, I need a little lie down now. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Follow us on Twitter at Blackshaw Update.
Watch us on the Instagrams at Blackshaw Theatre.
Like us on the Facebook at Blackshaw Online.
And find all the things at blackshawonline.com.